joy to the world. I want you to think back for a moment or two. What was a moment that you experienced really great joy? Okay, now if you can, I want you to try and step back into that moment. Where were you? What were the smells that were around you? What was the temperature of the place that you were in? Who was with you? Look around in your mind's eye again. See the faces that were there if others were with you. Were they also feeling the same joy? Or were they there primarily to support your own experience of joy? And how did you respond? Did you clap? Did you cry? Did you shout? Or was it just an experience of joy that you sensed deep within you? See, of all the emotions that we have, few can compare to joy. Sometimes joy is an emotion that we can anticipate for months off. Like we know it's coming, and when it finally comes, it meets all of our expectations. Other times, joy is something that just explodes in on us. When we least expect it, all of a sudden, there it is. Even in seasons when life is filled with the most amount of despair, great joy can still be experienced, pushing our other realities that we have in that moment of life, if even just for a moment, to the margins of our life. It's this emotion of joy that the Old Testament prophets tapped into when they were anticipating the advent or the coming of Jesus. And it's because of this that joy comprises one of the 4 weeks of the church's annual Advent celebration. As you may remember from other years of these podcasts, Advent is simply Latin for coming. That's what the word means. And it's at this time of year that we celebrate the coming of Jesus, his first coming. But it's also this time of year when we look forward to the promised second coming, the time when Jesus will fulfill all that he set in motion with the first coming. As part of this yearly celebration in the 4 weeks prior to Christmas, then, the church takes time to consider these four themes: hope, peace, joy, and love. All these ideas, these themes that Jesus, his coming, brought with him. And in the past 2 years, I've taken time to reflect on hope and peace. Maybe you want to go back and listen to those again in preparation for Christmas. This year, though, the theme I want to reflect on is this theme of joy. As I just mentioned, joy was one of the dominant emotions that the prophets tapped into when they spoke about the coming of Messiah, who we would later identify to be Jesus. And when we consider the context from which they were writing, the reason for their joy-filled anticipation makes perfect sense. See, most of the prophets were writing at a time when both Israel and Judah, just a little backstep, remember, after King David and King Solomon, Israel divided, it separated into two separate kingdoms. So the prophets were writing at a time then when Israel and Judah were in these places of great, deep darkness and evil. They had turned wholesale away from God. They had turned to the gods of the foreign nations, the Baals of the foreign nations. And they had become deeply depraved on many levels. It even actually came to the point where the kings of Israel were sacrificing their own children to foreign gods on the altar of God's temple in Jerusalem. It couldn't get much worse than that. And it was in the midst of this depravity then that the prophets came forward with a solemn task. They were preachers of doom. They were commissioned to proclaim warnings to their own people, announcing that because of their sin, they were about to be led into captivity at the hands of foreign armies, first Assyria and then Babylon. It would be this God-sanctioned discipline for these years of unrepentant evil. But the prophets were not only preachers of doom. They were also envisioners of a new future. See, along with seeing this coming exile, most of them also looked beyond this to a time of liberation, a time when a great ruler would rise up to lead God's people out of their season of exile and into the bright hope of a new day. And, said the prophets when they were proclaiming this other part of the message, that new day would not just be for the people of Israel, but it would also be for those from the distant islands and from the distant nations. It would be for the whole world, the great hope that they were proclaiming. Now, when you read this other side of the prophetic warning, sometimes it's almost like what they were seeing, this other part of their story, was so fantastic that they actually struggled to put it into words. They saw something that was so pleasant, so filled with hope, that in the end, all they could do was grasp for these metaphors. So Amos, the prophet Amos, said that the day of this coming day would be like, well, it would be like wine rushing down from the mountains. And Isaiah said, no, the day would be like lions lying down with lambs. No, the day would be, and on they went. And though they struggled to put it into words, the dominant emotion that they were conveying was overwhelming joy. In fact, again, grasping for words, in a couple of instances, they described a moment of such incredible joy that would envelop the world that it would even take over the elements. Listen to how Isaiah described it. He said, "You will go out with joy." This is in Isaiah 55. "You will go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills will burst into song before you, and all the trees of the field will clap their hands." In other words, as you are delivered by this great deliverer into this day of new hope, it will be like joy flooding into the earth. You will be led forth with peace. Even the mountains and the hills, the trees, everything, they're going to join in the experience of joy. Now, as we began, I asked you to imagine a moment of joy in your life and all the senses that accompanied that. Now, imagine this. This is what the prophets were seeing when they were thinking about the coming of the Messiah, the coming of Jesus. The mountains are going to burst into singing. Even the trees are going to clap. The rivers will sing, said the Psalms. Yes, the prophets proclaimed, pain was on the horizon, but just beyond, a deliverer was coming. A few weeks ago, Jolie and I watched a miniseries called The Band of Brothers. Over 8 different episodes, it tells the true story of the final days of World War II. It follows a squadron of paratroopers that were known as Easy Company. And it follows them from their training through the liberation of France right through to the end of the war. It was a graphic, but I mean, one of the best productions I've ever seen. In the early episodes, as Easy Company was just landing into France, things were very grim, as this company was entrenched in some of the worst warfare that the world had ever seen. Thousands, millions of people fighting and citizens were being killed. But as the series progresses, the climate of the story shifts. And the shift comes because the Allied forces begin to gain the upper hand, pushing back the Nazi forces. And with each new town delivered, the Easy Company and all the other Allied forces, as the movie depicts it, are greeted by these throngs of jubilant French citizens. There's dancing in the street, there's music, there's cheering, there's women rushing out from their houses to kiss the soldiers as they were marching through the newly liberated town. The scenes depict, and they're doing their best to depict something that was true of the time, but they depict this experience of sheer, unbridled joy that these towns in France were experiencing. The people had been just delivered from their evil captors, and the soldiers are seen by the crowds as liberating heroes, which, given what they had just been delivered from, it's exactly what they were. They were liberating heroes of the day. But then, as the movie, the miniseries progresses, it comes to the second last episode. And pushing further than into enemy territory, the Easy Company stumbles upon something that they had only begun to hear distant rumors of. Rumors that most, even at the time, were unwilling to believe were actually true. They stumbled upon a camp full of emaciated and dead prisoners. all of them Jews. Their captors had vacated the premises. They were aware that their evil deeds were about to be discovered. Leaving these remaining prisoners to await their deliverance or their coming soon death, whatever came first. As the miniseries shows it, as the Easy Company opened the gates, this time there was no dancing, there was no cheering. Most of the Jews that were alive didn't have enough strength to stand, let alone to dance. But what the filming captured was the same emotions as on the streets of France, but this time it could only be conveyed through the weak, imprisoned Jews' eyes. The Jews, having experienced the most horrific conditions the 20th century had ever known, had been delivered. Their agony was over. Deliverance was here, and you could see the joy in their eyes. Now, I realize a 21st century miniseries is limited, but it's as close as I can get to describe what the prophets were anticipating. And this, they understood, was why the world would be filled with joy. This is why even the trees would clap their hands, because though trapped in despair, a liberator was coming, and he was coming to set the people of Israel free, but even more, he was coming to set the whole world free. This is why the trees would clap their hands, because though trapped in this despair, the liberator was coming, and he would set even the distant nations to dancing. And so 400 years later, having gone through all that the prophets foretold, all the pain, all the captivity, then it would make sense that when the silence of heaven was finally broken, after the prophets finished their message, there was no more communication of God into the world. Nothing is recorded until 400 years later. And when that silence is broken, as I say, it would make sense that the first words spoken would be these. They were spoken to a group of unsuspecting shepherd boys, and they sounded like this. "Don't be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior, a Deliverer has been born to you. He is Christ, the Messiah, the Lord." This was heaven's liberation trumpet blast, declared by heavenly heralds, these angels. This was the announcement that Easy Company, so to speak, was on the horizon, that the great deliverer promised by the prophets was taking his place, and the general in charge of the liberation, God the Father himself, was leaking the plans first to a group of unsuspecting shepherds. The day of the mountain singing was now here. Joy was breaking into the silence, into the darkness of the world. The deliverer had been born, said the angels, in the town of David. But as the days after the announcements turned into years, some unsuspected things began to occur. First, the liberator-to-be didn't turn out to be that much of a warrior, at least not the way that everyone was expecting him to be. See, though the Jews had been released from their first captors, the Assyrians and the Babylonians, 400 years later, they were still in prison. Just now, it was to the Romans. And so by this point, everyone was expecting that the fulfillment of the prophetic hopes, the fulfillment of this great day of deliverance, this day of joy, would be about the overthrow of their captors. It would be about the overthrow of Rome and the establishing then of God's kingdom with God's people in the world, in the place of Rome. But instead, when Jesus finally matures up and begins his ministry and begins to communicate to the world, he says very little about Rome. And his talk about the kingdom made it sound as if it would start out small, like a mustard seed, imperceptibly even like yeast, he said, in a batch of dough. And certainly he had no thoughts about a military uprising. Instead, he starts preaching that if the enemy should strike you on the cheek, you should instead turn and offer him the other side. It was almost as if Jesus saw things completely different from what everyone was anticipating, that the kingdom of God was something that wouldn't initially be even seen with the eyes, that deliverance wouldn't be brought about through war, but through, of all things, love. And that the real enemy wasn't Rome, wasn't even Babylon. No, but the Israel and the whole world, though they could not see it, was actually under the captivity of something far more evil, something far more sinister. And springing from this then, the second unsuspected thing was that in the end, while the trees may have been clapping, few others were joining in. I mean, sure, there was a few bright moments earlier on when he was doing neat tricks, and there was that moment at the end when he rode into Jerusalem, but that was only because they thought that this was the moment where the real liberation was about to begin. Apart from this, few times, though, most came to downright despise him. Until finally, just a few days after the arrival into Jerusalem, they ordered that their liberator should be hung from the very trees that were intended to clap for his arrival. The great irony of it. And so in the end, dead in a cave, it would seem that the liberator would be in need of his own liberation. But despite the failure of most to see, there were still a few who got what the angels announced. They came to even understand, even taste, that the real liberation he was bringing was a liberation over sin and sickness and Satan and death. And soon they would also come to understand that what he was beginning, he was only beginning. Like the planting of a field, the harvest of the fruit would come later. And with each of these that got him, that had eyes to see, as he put it, their response was the same. Like the citizens of France and the Jews in the camp, they understood that their encounter with Jesus was also the moment of their liberation. He was the liberator promised by the prophets, come to set them free from the real problem in the world, come to establish within this world a kingdom from another world. And their response then joined in every case, with what they began to see that the mountains and the trees were doing. Look, said John the Baptist, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. He got it. The woman at the well that Jesus met later on, she went back into her hometown in Samaria and she said, he told me everything I ever did. And the town, it says, they believed. Another said, surely this is the prophet who has come into the world. The blind man who was healed by Jesus in John chapter 9 said to the interrogating Pharisees about who Jesus was, he said, one thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. And in the next season, he was standing before Jesus, worshiping him. And finally, Thomas, at the end of John's gospel, the one who doubted till the end, he stood before Jesus, and with these eyes and this expression of worship, he finally said, my Lord and my God. In the end, for most, see, his coming had nothing to do with joy, just the opposite, as hate and anger filled their cries for his crucifixion. But a few of them did see. They saw what the angels had seen. This was the one whose coming was, as the angels said, good news that was about joy for all the people. This Jesus was easy company, yet more, much, much, much more. This Christmas, I want you to think again about this Jesus that came, as the angels said, as a baby in the city of David. Now think about the liberation that he has secured for you. The release from sin and its punishment into freedom and friendship with God. The release from darkness into light. The release from death into life. And the knowledge that what he has begun in you, what he has begun in the world, one day we will know in full. The liberator has come to bring life and life to the full. And this life he intends for us to taste now, like liberated people spilling out into the streets, dancing with joy. His kids, his rescued ones, should be the ones that are leading the party, filled with joy, announcing to the world the good news that has come. But he also, Jesus, also wants us to hold on to the hope that the life we are now tasting, the life we should be tasting, the life we should be free to experience is just a hint, a foreshadow of the life that he intends to one day bring in full. Yes, the liberation has begun, but no eye has seen and no ear has heard what the general has in store for those who love him. And as you think this Christmas about this wonderful, joy-filled reality, think again about how he has also invited you to join him in the work. Like an ever-expanding easy company, Jesus is out in front, marching into darkness, old enemy territory filled with death camps, and he's spreading and announcing this great liberation hope everywhere he goes, and he's welcoming us to join in with the work. Hey, come out. Come out of your houses. Come out of your hiding. Come out of your dark corners. The war is over. It's been won by Jesus. It's been won by the Son. So come out into life and join the liberation march into freedom and into rest. Isn't that a great image? It's the same image that Isaiah had in chapter 11. Jesus out in front, waving this banner of the inbreaking kingdom, of the life that he is bringing, with the nations joining in as he marches through enemy territory. It says this in verse 11, "In that day, the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant that is left of the people of Assyria, from Lower Egypt, from Upper Egypt, from Cush, from Elam, from Babylon, from Hamath, from the islands of the sea." See, he's gathering people from all of these places, and it says, "He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles." Come, join in. Let's go. And as you think about these things, this great liberation hope, this Christmas, join in the joy-filled response of those who first saw and believe, and join in the response that even the trees know is a fitting response. If we who do believe are not filled with joy this Christmas, then who will be? Santa is not a reason for joy. Consuming more is not a reason for joy, but a reason for joy is that a liberator promised by the prophets has come, and he is still liberating, and he has a plan for complete liberation. This is good news of joy worthy of celebrating this Christmas. May the joy of this good news accompany your coming and your going this Christmas season. Merry Christmas. I love you all.